Are you trying to justify living life on a tropical beach? Believe it or not, my guest today found out that a few years in Cancun can actually mature you as an entrepreneur and leader. This is YPO 10 Minute Tips from the Top. I'm Kevin Daum, and each week I bring you insights from the world's top executives of YPO. All made possible with grants from Gazelle's Growth Institute, www.growthinstitute.com. YPO member Dan Levin was born and raised north of Chicago in an entrepreneurial family. After graduating from college, Dan moved to Cancun, Mexico for several years, where he built a successful property management business. Dan returned home to become the CEO of Kane Millwork, a firm his father had purchased. Since the Levin family purchased the company, Kane has increased revenue over 60 times. Under Dan's leadership, Kane has consistently achieved years of more than 20% top-line growth and now has one of the largest manufacturing facilities in the country. Dan is also a certified sommelier. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Pleasure to be here.
So you got tired of living the Mexico lifestyle? Too much tequila?
Yeah, you know, living on the beach gets old. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, you know what? It was one of those things where I wish I could say, because it was like late 2007 when I moved back, you know, the market starts to change. And I wish I could tell you that I had some great foresight of real estate, but it was really just a matter of I saw people were buying $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 US condos, $1 million condos, and were arguing with me over $300 a month being too much to manage it. And I'm like, this makes no sense. So, you know, I had a full service operation. I would master lease units and we'd rent those out. We had an interior decorator who would work with us and we would have the whole place outfitted, had an architect, we would remodel the units. It was full service start to finish. And as the margins kept getting lower and lower from people just doing it for nothing, I said, you know, I still have made money here. I'm going to leave while I'm ahead. My friends are moving on with their lives. I don't want to wake up one day, 40 years old, still sitting here on the beach. It was a great decision. And then I came back to spend some time at Kane.
Did you automatically say, hey, I'm going back into the family business?
You know, I was trying to decide if I wanted to do law school or get my MBA. And my dad said, you know, we have Kane. And I knew about it.
Who is running the business at this time?
So we had professional management. And so my dad says, well, you know, while you're figuring things out, why don't you go spend some time at Kane, see all the different departments, just check it out. And at that point, the economy's still good. So we're growing, like business is easy. So I go and I spent a year there and that year turned into 12 years.
How long before you moved to take it over?
So after about a year and a half, that's when the economy really started to turn. And something after my first year there, I sat down with my dad and I said, you know, here's my amateur assessment. Everyone here is focused on what's happening in the next 30 days. There's no thought about who are we bidding? Why are we bidding them? What's our plan for next year? What's our budget? I mean, nothing. Everyone's tactical. So he says, oh, well, why don't you just become CEO? Again, here I was 21 when I moved to Cancun, right? I'm fearless. So now I'm 25. I'm going to take over a construction subcontractor in January of 2009.
I'm sure that's what all management over there was thinking too, right? Let the 25-year-old kid come in and take over.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, of the management that was there in January of 2009 when I took over, one is still there.
What do you think is different about the one that stayed? Obviously, he could perform and meet your standards, but what do you think was different in his thinking?
It's a great question. So it's my VP of sales. I think the reason that he's still with us is A, he's loyal and he follows my directions, not blindly. He offers up. He'll tell me when he thinks that I'm making the wrong decision or a different insight. But what he does is once we collectively make a decision as a team, that's the deal. That's the direction we're going. The rest of the group shot a little bit too much from the hip and liked to showboat and we'd make a decision and then the opposite would happen. That's not going to work. It's not going to work for me.
Was a lot of the management team significantly older than you when you took over?
I mean, when you're 25 running a company, everyone's significantly older than you.
Right.
But yeah, 20 years.
Here you are, a bunch of baby boomers, and here comes the millennial in the door. Where was that a benefit and where was that a challenge?
The challenge is that you can't walk in and say, well, I have 20 years of experience or I've been in the building trades for so long. I mean, you're 25. You just don't have that kind of experience. So that's the biggest obstacle with your team and even to some extent with customers. So I think when you have someone from the outside, especially someone who's young and fearless and doesn't have all the baggage of what has been positive and negative, I think it gives a different perspective.
You talk about the fact that the other executives shoot from the hip. So what were your disciplines so that you weren't doing the same thing?
Let me clarify. Shooting from the hip is an okay thing sometimes. You got to try some stuff. More so, it was being a little bit too much of a cowboy. You know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And so you have to have some kind of guidance. You have to sit and look at all the variables and say, okay, here's where we'll take a risk and it's calculated. You don't just run to the room making decisions, throwing stuff around and see what sticks. At least that's not my style.
So with your style, do you have practices on how you would educate yourself and how you would grow as a leader? Or did you just say, I'm just going to develop along the way?
You know, a lot of it was developing from getting the shared experience of people around me. So I'm very fortunate to have a group of very experienced leaders who I've become close friends with who are mentors to me. That's been hugely valuable.
I understand that aside from the cabinetry and being a Cubs fan, you're also a bit of a whiner. But I think what they meant is you're actual trained sommelier.
I am a certified sommelier. You know,
Does that make you the popular guy at all your friends' houses? Do you have to bring the wine or just judge it when you go?
Well, a little bit of both. So I definitely bring the wine, but I will tell you it is a very interesting bar trick to be able to blind taste wines.
Did you just wake up and go, I'm going to become a sommelier?
Yeah. So I love to learn and I'm not passive at anything that I do. So my parents don't drink at all. We didn't really have alcohol in the house growing up. They'd have parties, but they just weren't drinking. There wasn't wine on the table. So when I moved to Mexico is when I got exposed to wine. They had some great wines down there because they were having wines from Argentina, Malbecs, really before it was common on menus here in the U.S. So
I never make it past the tequila. So
yeah. Fair enough. And so I start drinking this and I'm like, what? I'm like, this is good stuff. I need to know more about it. So I'm reading, I'm doing research, make my first trip to Napa. And I'm like, this is a world I need to understand. So as I get close to my 30th birthday, I say, you know, I don't just want to be a wine guy. I really want to do something with this passion. So I'm going to become a certified sommelier. It took me two and a half years. You know, I got to train with some incredible people here in Chicago who are all professionals. I'm the outsider. I mean, everyone.
Where did you go? Is there a CIA here or?
No. So actually with the Court of Master Sommeliers, there is no class. It's self-study, if you will. So you got to have a really good study group, a tasting group. And you show up on test day and you pass the test.
So let me get this straight. So you sign up online, you get a bunch of your friends together or people who become friends and you drink a lot of wine and talk about it.
Absolutely.
And that's how you become a sommelier.
Exactly.
I can't imagine anybody that's listening would want to do that.
Right.
I can't see why.
But there's, you know, there's four levels. Level one is the introductory exam. Probably about a 90% passage rate. It's very high level. So if you do your work, you can identify places, 90%. Then after we did that out, the second level's got about a 40% passage rate. That's when you become a certified sommelier.
Then you have to have the palate.
That takes practice. I mean, it's tasting. It's another theory exam, so it's all the knowledge. You're talking the entire world of wine, which is big. And then a service practical. So you are doing wine service for a master sommelier, which is one of the best 250 greatest, you know, wine professionals in the world, let's say. Coming from a guy who doesn't work in the restaurant industry, I knocked that out of the park. And in fact, not just patting myself on the back, but the master sommelier at the end, I was taking the exam out in Colorado. He said, I'm seeing from the notes here, you're from Chicago. I work for Trotter. Where do you work in Chicago? And I told him my story. I said, I'm actually not in the industry. It's a passion thing. He goes, I've been in this industry for a long time. Independent of you not being in the industry, you did an incredible job. I think the reason I passed the service exam is a lot of the same things I bring to leadership. You have to have confidence in what you're doing. You just know your stuff the best you can. You're never going to know everything in whatever you do, but have confidence in what you know. And if you get asked a question, whether it's a service exam for the sommelier or whether it's in business, even if you don't have the answer, use all the knowledge and other things that you've picked up along the way to come up with the best answer. That's why I passed. I bring that to work every single day.
Okay, Dan, it's time for the rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
What is your favorite question to ask when you meet someone new?
What is your favorite type of wine?
Now, wait a minute. I just have to ask then. Do you judge them on that basis then if they say something like Two Buck Chuck?
No, not at all. No. You know, as long as people are enjoying wine, I'm good with it. Just enjoy wine and I'm happy.
Fair enough. Name three of your personal core values.
Optimism, enthusiasm, and service to others. I think that's what defines me.
Who's had the greatest impact on you as a leader?
My YPO forum. I mean, they're incredible leaders. I've grown so much with them over the past 9 years from their experience.
What is your favorite business book?
Sun Tzu, The Art of War. When you're talking about battlefield agility and focus on flexibility, that's a pretty darn good business book.
What are you reading right now?
Rebel Talent by Francesca Gino.
What is the one leadership trait that brings success?
Open-mindedness.
What is the one leadership trait that kills success?
Lack of a vision.
Name one daily behavior that will help a leader grow.
Have personal interaction with all levels of your employees, not just the managers.
Name one trait that makes an employee valuable.
A burning desire to continuously learn and grow.
What's your strangest daily habit?
I don't know if it's strange. I talk to my parents every morning. That's my startup ritual.
What's the best way to show employees appreciation?
Tell them. Tell them how much you do, because it's more than likely the credit goes to them and not to you.
Well, I want to tell you how much we appreciate you coming on the show today. Thanks so much, Dan.
The pleasure is mine.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to Gazelle's Growth Institute for underwriting this program. Learn more at growthinstitute.com.
Join me next time when I'll be interviewing YPO member Shelly Sun, who shares how her grandmother's healthcare needs inspired her to build a successful franchise brand. I'm Kevin Daum, and you're listening to YPO 10-Minute Tips from the Top. To learn more about YPO, please visit ypo.org.